Okay, I'm muting everybody. Everybody does have the ability to unmute themselves. Welcome all to the March 23rd Q&A. And so just a reminder, we are audio recording, and the audio recording along with the contents of the chat window and the deck will go up on our website probably later on this evening. And so again, welcome all. And I, in this case, I'm going to kick it over to Bob Walker to start it off because he's going to do a share and he wants to share a screen. So Bob, take it away.
Okay. So let me get the presentation started here. Are you seeing my presentation in the full window?
Yes, indeed.
Okay. I was a bit worried about that tonight because I just upgraded this machine to Office 2019. And when I started up this presentation, I have a dual monitors. It came up all wonky. And fortunately, I still had the Office 2010 on the same machine. And so I'm running this in Office 2010 to get the results I expect. Okay, so a little while ago, I went to edit a couple of videos. And when I tried to install my 10-year-plus years old copy of Corel Video Studio on my current computer, I couldn't find the license key. Now, I didn't want to buy a new copy just to do some minor editing on a couple of videos, but then I remember the presentation that Alan German gave about the free, and free is good, video editing software Shotcut. Okay, so back in 2018, Alan gave a great presentation on simple video editing, using the free open source cross-platform, which means Windows, Linux, and Apple, video editor software called Shotcut. And the link to the presentation is at the bottom of the slide there. Since then, Shotcut has gained some great new features, and they've added many tutorial and learning resources as well. So the good news is, there's still a free version of Shotcut available. The bad news is the free version also contains ads now. Now, there's two ways to get around the ads. One is when you go to download the free version, you have the option of making a donation through a credit card, debit card, or PayPal to get an ad-free version. Now, I recommend PayPal if you're going to do this. The second way of getting around the ads is on the same download page, you can click on a link to the Microsoft Store, and for Canadian $12.99 plus tax, you can get a version that avoids the ads and gives you automatic updates. Now, the donation, given that Microsoft... you can buy the Microsoft version for $12.99 Canadian and get automatic updates and all that. I figure probably a $10 Canadian donation should be adequate. They don't specify a donation amount. And assuming that from that, if you donate 99 cents, they'll still give you the ad-free version. Now, on the donation page, you make the donation in euros. And PayPal will convert this automatically as you go through the PayPal process. But just for your information, $10 Canadian is about 7.25 euros, more or less. That changes on a daily basis. You might want to check it first. Now, if you download the paid version from the Microsoft Store, you will not get an install file to download to your computer and execute because Microsoft installs the app directly from their site. You should check out the free version or the donation version before making a decision to get it from a Microsoft store. The Microsoft version ties you to the Microsoft store, and depending on your opinions about Microsoft, that can be a good or a bad thing. Depending on your point of view. I'm going to cover a bit more on the issues around the Microsoft one at the end of this presentation, but the presentation is about Shotcut. So first thing is, you know, video editing software even the easy to use stuff isn't that easy to use. It's complex software. So to learn how to use Shotcut, you can start with Alan's presentation at the URL listed there. On the next slide, I'm going to list three starter videos that are also great to start with. And then there's more advanced videos and other tutorials at shotcut.org/tutorials. There's also many great videos on YouTube that are not from Shotcut. And some of these come from the skillsfactory.com. Skillsfactory.com is a great site for tutorials on all sorts of other software as well. Now the starter videos, one is an introduction and an overview, is from Shotcut. If you decide to download the video, and I'll cover that in a few weeks on another presentation, it comes to 49 megabytes, and I put the size of the files here for the videos just so you can get an idea relative to each other how complex they are. The second one is a full tutorial from Shotcut, and the third one is entitled Shotcut Video Editor, Tutorial for Beginners in 10 Minutes from the Skills Factory. The Skills Factory one is quite good, except the guy doing the presentation keeps on calling it Shortcut instead of Shotcut. So now, why would you want to use Shotcut rather than another video editor? First off, it has many very powerful features. And especially for such a capable program, it's relatively easy to use. And that's great if you're just going to be an occasional video editing user. There's all sorts of excellent tutorials and guides, including videos and other stuff online, so to help you learn how to use Shotcut. And if you're only going to use it occasionally, you can use it for free and live with the ads. Or by making a modest donation, or even the paid-for Microsoft version, it's still very, very expensive. Most of the other paid video editors start at $80 and go all the way on up to $100 a month. So Shotcut is a real cheap way to do it. Quick screenshot here of the basic user interface. A lot of the stuff is normal. You've got your open file and save icons and some of the other standard icons along the top there. There's a preview screen here showing the current video that you're working on. Below that, there's a timeline that has a start point, an end point, and the where you are now current point. Just below it, where did my cursor go here? Just below it, there's the counter, so you can fine-tune the timing by to within a second. And down here, number seven, this whole area here is a field where the timelines for all the videos, timelines for any of the audio tracks, and all that display when you're editing and piecing them together, merging them together, adding separate audio tracks and everything. And it gets pretty complicated, but you follow the tutorials, you'll understand how it all works. And if you're doing something simple like just cutting the length of a video, you never even have to use the number seven field there. Now, Shotcut has all sorts of video effects, editing features, format for a support for wide format screens, 4K resolutions. I'm not going to read all this stuff to you. You can, if you're interested, you can download the deck and go through it all. There's lots of audio features. However, I've highlighted stereo, mono, and 5.1 surround sound are built in. but I'm not sure about the capabilities for multi-track sound. So if you're going to do some complex multi-track audio, as if you want to make a professional copy version of a music video for your good friend Drake, then you might have to investigate further or spend some coin for a full professional version. There's all sorts of cross-platform and codec support. Codecs are the little bits of code that tells Windows 10 or any version or Linux or anything else how to use and operate with that particular file format. For example, MP4. Shotcut and a lot of other video editing platforms and viewers are codec independent. They handle it on their own. Shotcut also has is available in all sorts of languages, but they have the caveat at the end of that section saying not all are 100%. But you can click on the link on the Shotcut site to help fix the translations if you're so inclined. There's all sorts of display and monitor support, all sorts of hardware support. So a lot of features in Shotcut that make it pretty near a professional grade. I'm going to cover the Microsoft Direct Install a little wee bit. Because Microsoft installs directly on your computer without downloading an install file, Shotcut shows up in the start menu as normal on any newly installed program. And you can right-click on that to pin it to the taskbar as well. But there's no desktop shortcut. So if you decide you want a desktop shortcut and you right-click on your desktop and click on Create a Shortcut, normally you'd browse to the location of the program's .exe file, either in C program files or C program files x86 to find out where the .exe is, but it's not there. The Shotcut directory with the .exe file is under C program files /winapps / and a big long alphabet soup there, or something similar. It might be slightly different on if you install it on your machine. But this is a hidden system directory, so you can't use a normal right-click on your desktop to create a shortcut, even if you know where the .exe is hidden away. There's probably ways of getting around that, but I'm sort of getting away from using desktop shortcuts myself and sticking with the start menu or the taskbar. But if that's important to you, that can be a consideration. Now, if you install the free or the donation version of Shotcut from the downloaded install file, you'll get the usual start menu and desktop shortcut, and then you can pin to the taskbar from the start menu like normal. So that's about it for Shotcut tonight. Coming up soon, but not necessarily starting next week or the week after, I'm going to do a mini series on downloading and working with videos and audio files, starting with how to download videos and audio from YouTube using the browser extension Video Download Helper. This works with YouTube-type sites. If you can't download from those because they block you, The debut video capture and screen recorder software will help you capture the videos anyway, and it can also do some downloads. And then we'll look at how to do still and video screen capture using Screen Hunter Pro, and how to capture or rip audio from a video file, and how to take a screenshot of the current video frame using the GOM player. We'll also be looking at how to rip your CDs to MP3s using ExpressRip CD Ripper, and having a look at how to edit the tags or the metadata within your MP3s so that your MP3 player or your car infotainment system or your smartphone gives you the right information on the tunes that you're playing. Pretty much all of this software is either free or they have a free version, and you get a more premium version for quite a reasonable extra price. So we'll be looking at that starting in a few weeks, and hopefully not too long, and then we'll go from there. And let me stop sharing my screen here.
Okay. Just before we go on, there was one comment from Timothy in the chat about if you lose your license keys or don't have access to your license keys, you can use BellArc Advisor, which will allow you to find it in your current installation as opposed to your envelope or CD that you lost or whatever. And Alan posted the URL to that. One thing I'd like to comment on Windows Store apps that may be an advantage to some people is that normally, and I double-checked about Shotcut, and you can actually install it on up to 10 computers for that one price. So if you have multiple computers that you wanted to install Shotcut on, you may see an advantage to the licensing. I don't know how they license it for your desktop, if it's one computer or what, but that is one advantage of installing from the Microsoft Store, is normally being able to install on 10 computers.
Yeah, just a couple of comments. Because my version of Corel Video Studio there was so old, I wasn't really too worried about trying to find the license key file. Secondly, I've got a story I'll be coming up with maybe next week or the week after on what happens when you're downloading stuff from the Microsoft Store and you have a second computer up and running within Bluetooth range. And the funny things you're going to have happen between them. And some of the other issues with downloading from Microsoft Store, like, well, I'll get into that in a week or two. So.
Okay, so thanks very much, Bob. And we will move along. So thanks to everybody who volunteered to share some stuff this week and people who sent questions, because we were very light early on in the week. And this question came in kind of sad. Basically, how to copy an Android message thread. This individual had her brother's death to deal with, and there were some messages on the phone that she wanted to save. So she's saying, do you have any suggestions for an easy way to copy an entire text message thread? And this is using the Messages app on a Samsung A-series Android phone, version 11 of Android. She'd saved the graphics to the cell phone and forwarded them as attachments by email, but couldn't find a way to copy more than one text message at a time. And I guess if it's a long thread, then that's a problem. And there were instructions on backing some things up to Google Drive, but she really wants the direct save option and to the internal SD card or forwarding them as an attachment to email. Now, this is something I've never done. So I looked at my brand new Samsung A-series phone, slightly different model, but same idea. And the only thing I could find natively in the Messages app was a way to archive messages. And that basically takes them out of the current list and socks them away somewhere in the background. And you can undo that archive. Presumably they're stored somewhere on the phone. And if you really looked hard, I guess you could probably find it. But maybe it's on the admin only area and you can't get to it as a regular user. I really don't know. But then I had a bright idea. I remembered we had a request to download call logs. And there was a follow-up to that. And the follow-up was basically doing a Google search for how to save the call log or call history. And the answer came up to use this program called Droid Transfer. And Droid Transfer is a kind of an interesting package. It's a kind of a two-part solution. So you load an app onto your phone and you download a program onto your computer, and the Droid Transfer basically sets up communication between the phone and the computer so that you can transfer files. And it's really kind of neat because what happens is you run the program on the PC, and it basically shows you a QR code. So you take the phone and you run the Droid Transfer app on the phone, which is the window on the left here, the Transfer Companion, and it tells you to scan the Droid Transfer QR code. So if you point the phone now at this QR code, you actually have a QR code reader built into the Transfer Companion app. And so you click, you scan the QR code, and it immediately launches the other part of the Droid Transfer program and gives you some options. And we were looking at this option to transfer the call logs, and I was showing here how you can pick up a call log from stuff that my wife had called me several times. And I have the option to save it as a CSV file, which is a comma-separated variable file, which was what the original questioner wanted to do. They wanted to save the call log as a CSV file. Now, however, if you look down the list of the menu items here, in addition to call logs, you can also see that there's an option for messages. So if you click on this option here for messages, then it basically goes to the phone and it finds all of the message threads that are currently on your phone. And you can click on one of these. So here's one from my buddy David, who's actually one of my neighbors. And here is a message thread from David this was a day when the power went out in the neighborhood. And he's basically just checking that have we got power? And the answer was, no, we hadn't. It was out for several hours in the afternoon. However, you know, it's a message thread. And in addition to be able to save it as text, notice that I can also save it as a PDF, or I can save it as HTML, or I can send it to the printer. So in this case, I thought maybe rather than a CSV file, it would be interesting to save it as a PDF file. So I click on Save as PDF, and it creates a PDF file. And then when I open that PDF file in a PDF viewer I'm using, PDF Exchange Viewer, you can see I basically have a full color, word for word, message for message representation of the entire message thread. And you also notice that I'm getting this watermark here, which tells me that this thread was exported using the demo version of Droid Transfer, which gives you a clue that this is the free version. And if you wanted to get rid of the watermark, presumably you have to purchase the pro version of Droid Transfer or edit the PDF file and get rid of that. Anyway, there's an interesting program to basically transfer a whole bunch of different things from your smartphone relatively easily. And I usually use software data cable, which is it sets up communication between the phone and the computer, but then I have to run an FTP client in order to transfer files. And this Droid Transfer program basically sets up the communication much easier by using that QR code and gives you a very easy option to save information in a number of different formats. So if anybody's interested in transferring files from their phone to their computer, I recommend you give Droid Transfer a look.
Alan, you mentioned that it says in the watermark how you only get 5 messages in any conversation in the free version. Do you know what the paid version actually costs?
No, I don't. I hadn't noticed that. Because this message thread only has 2 messages. I got them all. I didn't realize that. Well, that's bad. By the same token, I don't think Droid Transfer is terribly expensive. Usually apps are not.
Usually a few bucks.
A few dollars probably.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'll check on that and maybe do a follow-up next week.
There, we already have something for next week, Q&A.
Okay, so the next thing on the agenda is from Chris.
Yeah, so I happened across this when I was trying to add an animated GIF file to a presentation I was doing. And one of the things that I found kind of annoying about animated GIFs, for the most part, is they tend to loop continuously. And as you can see on the screen there, the animated GIF that is going on, it's not bad because it sort of looks like it's a continuous action. And so it's not really annoying that the fact that it's actually a looping GIF. Next. On the other hand, you can get cases like this where you have something go on and then it starts looping. And it gets really, really annoying when you have these animated GIFs of people, you know, making a comment or something like that. And then you see them make the comment. And it gets really annoying seeing it actually looping like that. And I thought, let me see if I can find a way to stop that from doing the actual looping. So what I want is to play once, like you see there, and then just stop, rather than where you have it as a continuous loop where it continues on like that and just goes on forever. So that's what I was really interested in having happen. So next. So I found a site, easygif.com, and you do it all online. There's nothing to download on your computer. And you go to that URL, you click on the button to choose your file, and you point to it on your computer, and it uploads that particular file. Next. And then the GIF will actually load on the computer, and you scroll down, and you see an option to split the frames. And next. And then you'll get an actual list of all of the frames that are within the GIF. If you scroll down to the bottom of it all, you actually have an option there to edit the animation. And you click on that. And then you'll have in the GIF options there, the first red box that I've got, there's a loop count. And in my case, the loop count was blank, which meant that it just loops continuously. So all you have to do is change that to loop just once and then click on make a GIF. And then it'll create the file for you. And then you just save it, and then you save it on your computer, and now all of a sudden you've removed that continuous looping going on in the GIF. So if anybody has any need for that type of thing, there's all kinds of other GIF, animated GIF tools that are on this site. I haven't explored them. This was the only one that I was really interested in, but others might find it useful. So that's the share for tonight.
Yeah, Bob Walker here. Some of the other things you can do on this site, occasionally you get a GIF that plays at warp speed, just like so fast that you can't really see it very well. And you can slow it down on this site. You can make your own GIFs. You can edit various GIFs. So it's a fairly powerful site that you can use.
Cool.
Okay, thanks, Chris. And I don't think I'll need to do a follow-up next week. Natalie's actually checked on the cost of Droid Transfer, and rather than a few dollars, I kind of suggested, it turns out it's actually $38 Canadian, which is actually pretty expensive for an Android app. And it's good for 2 computers and for an unlimited number of Android devices. But even so, If you need the capability, it's probably not unreasonable, but it's expensive for an Android app.
Yeah.
Okay, moving along, we have another share from this time from Jocelyn Dwyer.
Hello.
Joss is going to share his screen, I think, so we'll have a little hiatus while he picks up.
I think this is the one. Everybody can see that?
Yep.
Yep. There you go.
All right. I just want to talk a little bit about some little games, word games. The first time I heard about that is Wordle, which is just a little game that make you guess a five-letter word. According to the free dictionary, apparently there are 158,000 five-letter words. I find that surprising, but anyway. So the first time I heard about it was the New York Times about Wordle, and there was discussion about if it would remain free or not. So this is basically what it looks like. So you start, all the boxes are free, are empty. So the first thing you need to do is just to guess a word. For example, I type race. And in this particular case, the R is part of the word, and so is the E, but the AC is not. So I tried to make another guess, and all the letters were bad. So try a third option. So now I have three letters on my word, but they are all in the wrong order. So I try a fourth letter, and this time I know that the U is in the right place. And from the four letters I knew were there, I was able to guess the right word. And so it became all green. So the green means that it is, the letter is in the right place. The yellow means that it is the right letter, but not in the wrong place. And the black are not possible. And those here are still not used, the gray ones. So basically you type your letter, you can erase your letters. And when you're happy, you click enter. Now, one little thing about that one, you cannot get addicted to that one because you have only one word per day. So after one day, you have to wait another day to try it again. So when I heard about it was purchased by New York Times, I heard that there was another version called Kennacle, which the same idea. But this one, as you can see, the colors are different. This one is the red for the good letter. But all those words in that place are Canadian-related word. So it makes things a little, and can be also place words. For example, Yukon is a possibility. Now, if you want a little bit more challenging, you can try a two-word version. So again, same idea. You type your guess, but this time you have to the letters that you have that are good or not good appears on both places. And as you can see, you have a maximum of six chances to guess what is the right word. This one is, you can have as many time as you want per day, so this one is not limited. And if you want even more challenging, you can get the four-word version, the Cordal. So again, the colors are different. And this one, on the keyboard, you have some kind of coding that shows, for example, the E is available in one place, the C is available, is a good place, and so on. So depending on, so there's each corner it has some coding for the thing. And if you want even more challenging, you can try the eight words. This one has two versions. There is the daily version, and which has only one chance per day, and the free or is as many times as you want per day. So again, as you can see, all the colors are different, so that makes a little bit challenging to, if you want to try them all, is okay, what color am I going to use this time? So anyway, and the top one is 16 words. In this one, you have 21 chances to guess all 16 words. Obviously, the more you make right guesses, or the more you make guesses, it gives you clues to find the thing. So, but this one takes a little bit more time, I'm sure, and might not be. You will have to really work at it if you want to finish all your 16 guesses before the 21 is out. The internet has multiple tools that can help you. And one I find very interesting is this one, and I will provide the link as soon as I'm out of there. Basically, you can enter how many the letters that you know, what letter it starts with, what it ends, and you have different options. And then it will give you all the possible words that are with that filter. So I don't know if it's called, I don't know if it's help or cheating. I'll let you decide which way it goes. So if you want to be very serious and really train your brain, don't use that. But good luck for some of them. And finally, the last version is a different scheme. Is this one is mathematics. So again, you can enter equations, but they have to be valid. You cannot make a wrong an invalid equations. And as you and some in this case, there is just one operation, but you can have sometimes two operations. It can be a plus and a minus, or a plus or a multiply, but again, it has to fit in all the boxes. So if you want to use your math skill, that's one way to do it. So that's it. So does anybody have any questions or?
We have a question from Stuart. Have you found any Francophone versions of these games?
I have not tried. So, but that's, I have not tried. I'm going to, I guess there are, there must be.
If anybody's found them, you can do a follow-up next week.
Exactly right. So it would be very nice to know about it. One little thing I wanted to add, you can start with any words you want, but there is words that are better than others. In this example, I give you four different words that have all different letters. So, for example, race has five letters, and then blonde has five other different letters. So that's one way to help you yourself to find the to help you to avoid duplication. So again, up to you to choose the word you want. So, but that's it. Have fun and have your brain a good exercise.
And Justin, you can look on the web for assistance too, and you'll find that somebody has actually run grep on a dictionary and found the most commonly used word in the English language, and a whole bunch of words that are really good for starting, ones that have three vowels, for instance. So there's all kinds of tricks and ways to get around this thing. Oh, and there's also a way to dig into the actual HTML code behind the Wordle web page and look at the answer right there.
Yeah. What's the point of playing if that's what
that's
you
no
do?
That's no fun, right? Yeah, that's absolutely no fun.
I tend to look for words that have T, L, N, E, R, because they're very common letters. Right. But yeah, it's fun playing those.
Yeah. If you want a little break, it's a nice thing to, it's a nice diversion. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Justin. That was great. Okay, so the next thing is we have a question, basically a follow-up from things that we've done in the past, asking what the latest is about Windows 11, and pointing out that when Windows 11 was released last year, there was a less than enthusiastic response. As Microsoft reduce the requirements in terms of the CPU, the chip that's in the computer, and do you still need a TPM chip, a security chip? If anybody's using Windows 11, is there any compelling functionality that would entice anybody who's already happy with Windows 10 to upgrade to 11? And then finally, are there any features of Windows 11 that are likely to be annoying to a Windows 10 user? And there's an editorial comment here, and I'll just point out that this is not my comment. So it's not only me that thinks things similar about Microsoft. So he says, are there any annoyances? And we all know that one of Microsoft's key business strategies is to find new and unique ways to annoy its customers. Okay, so if anybody is using Windows 11, the questions are, is there anything compelling that will keep you doing that? And is there anything annoying that is going to affect people who like Windows 10? And in the meantime, I pushed this question past Chris, and he and I didn't know of any differences in terms of the hardware requirements. And indeed, I found this link on the web just a few days ago from a Microsoft website, basically listing the requirements for Windows 11. And it still requires a, quote, compatible 64-bit processor. So if you look at that list, there's a link there to a list of compatible processors. And in my case, none of my computers have a CPU that's compatible. So none of my machines are going to upgrade to Windows 11. And then the other thing is, the question was, is a TPM chip still required? And the answer is yes, it is. It has to be TPM version 2.0. I found another link just today, in fact, an updated review from PC Magazine listing the pros and the cons for Windows 11, and basically says it's a beautiful, more consistent new design. It will run Android apps, but it requires a recent CPU, and some tools have gone away. And so if you use Timeline and Tablet Gestures and the Action Center, then those things are not available and are different. So if you're interested, there's the link to the review. And then in terms of annoyances to people, I found this one, again, a few days ago. Apparently, in one of the insider builds, Windows is using a watermark. So if you look in the bottom right-hand corner of the desktop, you'll find that there's this message here that says, this is if you don't have a high-end chip. The system requirements are not met. Go to the settings menu to learn more. So that if you don't have a supported computer and you've loaded Windows 11 anyway, which Windows will allow you to do, now you're going to see this message telling you that you're a bad person and you shouldn't be doing this.
Now, you won't accidentally get into that boat, though, because if you just try to install it, it will enforce the hardware requirements. But there are some documented workarounds that Microsoft put out that they put them out, they say, just to allow for testing purposes and things like that, that they would allow it to run on less than their hardware requirements. But they always warned that at some point you may not be able to get Windows updates and some other things like that. So I think they're now dropping the hammer and saying that, okay, well, we're gonna really restrict you. Why they ever allowed it to run on unsupported hardware and only to turn around and make life miserable, Lord only knows why.
You could look at a beautiful new design, Chris.
Yeah, right. I can tell you one of the things that I find as an annoyance on it. I haven't been running it, but I continue to keep up to date more or less on the insider builds. And so these are ones that before it goes to the great masses, they will do these insider builds where they actually change quite a bit. And it really is quite fluid. and they've been changing quite a bit about the user interface over time in these insider builds that eventually do go out to people. So if you like a stable, you know, unchanging interface, and most of the important changes that, you know, people notice are, of course, the user interface changes. And if you like something very stable, I would hold off before going to Windows 11, because you can be sure that over the next year, you're going to see some fairly significant changes in behavior in Windows 11.
So that's it for me. I don't have anything else on Windows 11. Because my machines aren't going to run it, I haven't been following any of the chat about Windows 11, so I really know nothing about it. So again, if anybody has been using it and there are good things, bad things, and ugly things, if you want to comment, feel free to open up your microphone and tell us all about it.
We should actually take a poll to see how many people have actually used it. Yeah, Josh says, what percentage of computer can run Windows 11 at this time? I don't know about the percentage, but I mean, it has to be, you know, a CPU that is within the last, I guess, about 3 or 4 years. If you're older than that on the CPU, it's not likely to meet its requirements. On the Intel side, I think it's 8th generation core processor or better. We're only up to, well, they're just coming out with the 12th generation, but considering that they come out with a new generation every year pretty much, yeah, you're talking about, you know, it has to have been within the last 4 years or so. And there are similar sort of requirements on the AMD side. So it's not a huge percentage of computers. My computers, which I keep fairly current on my computers, my desktop will meet it. My two laptops don't. They're 7th gen core processors. They're really good computers, but yeah, they don't meet the requirements.
Karen's shooting for 0%. No, hers are going to run it.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe I was wrong. I really thought all along, since they introduced Windows 11 with these hardware requirements, that they were going to back off on them and they would allow, you know, going back to older generations than that. I can't see going back to, you know, 4th generation core processors, but, you know, anything 7th gen or better, that would give, you know, a lot of computers that are currently out there, you know, a path forward. But so far they haven't backed off, so maybe they're not going to. I don't know. I really thought they would.
Micheline just posted a link to an article on TPM, Intel's PTT, which is an equivalent, and an AMD system called FTPM. Okay, well, I don't see anybody rushing to defend or denigrate Windows 11. Jocelyn says he's got a new share, so Jocelyn, why don't you share your screen and let's go with that.
Okay, just up the sharing of others. I think that's the one, yes. I think that Chris did talk about those commands a little bit before, but I had one of the laptops that was having the hard drive running, having a very high usage of the hard drive, and the computer was becoming very quickly unusable. So thanks to Google, I did a little search. And I found that answer from Microsoft that did solve my problem. And basically what I did is I ran the command prompt in administrator mode and ran those four commands. It takes a very long time to run, but it did solve my problem. So if other people have a very, very computer slowing down on Windows 10, computer that slows down a lot, that might be something that might help. And actually, a month or two later, I had another laptop that had this similar disease. and it was slowing down a lot. So again, that did solve my problem. So anyway, so that might help a little bit for somebody else. So I'm just going to copy the link on the thing for. So if you have a slow computer, that's something you may want to consider to look at.
Yeah, just to follow up on that, Joss, I'm actually running a Windows update on one of my really old computers, an old netbook, and it's being incredibly slow. In fact, it seems every now and again that it stops. And I found that one of the ways to get around it was to run the disk cleanup on the system files, because what it had done was it had installed a feature update, and the Windows backup files, in order to roll back, were something like 6 gigabytes. And I think that was essentially taking up too much disk space, and Windows basically stalled. So that's another thing you can do, is to run disk cleanup, especially on the system files, and see if there's any huge files sitting around taking up space.
I was just wondering, does anybody know what those commands does? I know that from what I understand, it looks like it reinstalls Windows 10.
It's not so much that it reinstalls it as it really checks to see the integrity of the files and replaces any that need replacing. It's not as if it does a complete reinstall or anything like that.
Okay.
DISM stands for the Deployment Imaging and Something Management.
System
or something
Management.
Like that. System Management, okay. And so, yeah, basically it's just, comparing the files with known good is probably the easiest way to look at it.
Okay. In my case, they are giving some more steps to take, but after running those 4 commands in the admin mode, did solve my problem. So I did not have to need to follow the other commands, but there is more instructions. So up to you to take it or not.
They are safe commands to run. I've never heard of them causing any problems on systems. They can take a long time to run, so don't do it when you have to shut down your computer anytime soon. You could be an hour running these commands. I've never heard of anything bad happening because of it. You can run it on a perfectly healthy system, and it will just do nothing and happily report at the end that everything is fine. But it might cure problems as well.
In my case, it took hours, but it's a relatively slow computer, but still it can take a very long time. I had some error things, but I simply continue on, and everything seems to be working fine. So since then, I hope it helps somebody else.
Okay, thanks, Joss. So we have a few minutes, I guess, before the hour's up. Does anybody have any other questions or things they'd like to share? Or any thoughts about Windows 11?
Maybe you could carry on with the wrap-up slides, Alan, and if we see any questions or shares come in, we can interrupt or cover them after your final slides.
Okay. Right, so a few things. First of all, it's almost the end of March, and I think everybody, I didn't see anybody who was a non-member tonight, but maybe there are some people out there. If you're not a member of the club, if you are a member of the club, you don't have to do anything. You get a membership extension as of March 31st. So if you're a member right now, you'll get a free membership year. If you're not a club member, then until March the 31st, if you join the club for the 1 year, $20, we will give you an additional second year absolutely free. So this is a 2-for-1 membership, but it's only good until March the 31st. And we've been hammering on this for since January the 1st. So this is the last call because we won't have another meeting before this membership offer expires.
Well, we will have one more Q&A where we'll advertise it again.
Because it's March the 30th. We have a Q&A on March the 30th. All right, so it's the nearly last call. The nearly last call. And it's also the nearly last call for the Tech Talk series, and in particular for the spring cleanup, which is going to be on April the 4th. If you're a member, it's a free Zoom call. If you're not a member, it's $20, and we will include a one-year membership. And if you send us that $20 before March the 31st, you get two-year membership. So there you go. So if you have any interest in these kind of basic computer-type things, backup and security and passwords and email and cleaning things up in general, I think this is a really neat, it's going to be a really neat session. There's lots of good stuff. As it says, 10 tips to remove those digital cobwebs. But you have to register, because if we do get anybody who is a non-member that we're charging for, then we're going to send out the Zoom link to the people who have registered. So go to the website and register if you're at all interested. And then our next regular meeting, the monthly meeting, the April meeting, is going to be on April the 13th. And we've got a couple of very dubious characters going to be talking about a couple of very dubious software programs. Chris and myself are going to be doing a kind of a knockdown on the two Office products of note, Microsoft Office, and we settled on Office 2019. And LibreOffice, and we've settled on the current version, which I think is 7.3.1 or something. And we're going to be doing basically a kind of a compare and contrast, what's good, what's not so good. If you're using one, should you update to the other, and vice versa. So it promises to be quite interesting and maybe a bit of fun too.
We have a couple of questions in the chat just before we end that tonight. Edward asked, thinking of Windows 11 requirements, what's the difference between TPM 1 and TPM 2? And what does TPM actually do? I'm not sure what the differences are. And I'm not even really sure what TPM actually does. So if anybody has an idea, you could jump in with that. And we have a question from Glenn, I guess aimed at Bob or I guess Alan, because you use Shotcut too. Does Shotcut import proprietary video formats, or do you have to do a conversion first? So Bob, if you wanted to unmute yourself, if you have an idea on that.
To be honest, I don't have an idea. If you download the deck, you might see the different things they support. Or you can go to the Shotcut site itself and look for their supported video formats. I believe it's fairly extensive, but I wouldn't necessarily count on it taking care of some of the proprietary ones. But I think it handles pretty much all the standard ones, and there's many, many of those.
Yeah, and I've only ever used things like MP4s and AVIs, I think.
Yeah. I mean, the formats you're likely to run into in most cases, I think you're probably covered. Tristan, thank you very much. Tristan pasted into the chat an article on the differences of the TPM versions. So thank you very much for that, Tristan. So who was it? Edward, if you wanted to pick up that URL in the chat, you can read up on what they're about. And we have a question from Stu. Did Karen ever solve her Google Lens app issue? Karen, you still on the line? Yes, Karen is still on the line. If you wanted to unmute yourself.
Hello, Stu. Thank you very much for asking. It was a real pain. I ended up having to go through all kinds of machinations, doing all different sorts of things. I have no idea what I finally did that worked, but I did do something, some combination that did work. I've uninstalled, I've reinstalled, I've cleared caches, I've cleared the Play Store, I restarted my phone several times in all these different iterations, but eventually I did go to a friend and say, what is this thing actually supposed to look like now? Because it has changed in its presentation from what I did have on. So there was something caught somewhere, and with everything that I ended up doing clearing out, I did finally get it to work, but it probably took me about 3 days, lots of args all through that, but I did finally get it working, so thanks for asking. And I don't know what the magic was.
Congratulations.
And I noticed, Linda had pointed out that I had April 13th, 2021. Of course, it's April 2022 for the SmackDown. And Timothy had said Windows 10 support is going to end sometime in 2024. It's actually October 2025. So we have, if you're running Windows 10, you've got lots of time to think about what to do in terms of changing from an end-of-life product.
Yeah, I'm in no rush.
I'm already dual booting, so I don't care.
So much for Microsoft's promise that Windows 10 was going to be their forever Windows product.
Yeah, I've read a bunch on that, and much as there has been documented evidence of them having said it would be the last version of Windows, the other powers that be have actually said, no, we didn't really promise that. Well, it's still free, so for people that are on Windows 10 anyway. So in essence, it's, they call it a different version number, but it still doesn't cost you anything to move to it if you want it.
Well, it does if you have to buy a new computer.
Yeah, but that could happen even if they stuck with the term Windows 10 and they just decided that, for this annual feature update, now you need the following. They could have done that too. I don't know. Anyhow, Jocelyn also pasted in a little bit about the TPM, what it actually does. And yeah, it's all about authentication credentials and protecting them. So it is in the name of computer security is what they've actually hung the hat on that particular requirement. I've long argued against that, saying that keeping people on older versions of Windows doesn't do them any favors security-wise. So if you're providing a new version of the operating system because you say it's more secure, and you're preventing people from getting to that more secure version because of arbitrary requirements, I think it's arbitrary requirements, then you're not improving people's security by leaving them on older versions of Windows. But then Microsoft doesn't seem to listen to me too much, so.
And Tristan says it's all about the enterprise customers where they make all their money. And that's an interesting question, because business systems, they're not generally too happy about having to purchase new hardware.
Yeah. And I don't know that it really is about making money on their enterprise customers either, because a lot of larger enterprises typically are on programs that, entitle people to the newest version of the operating system, as well as the apps and things like that. So large enterprise customers, this is non-issue in terms of that. So, yeah, and as you say, Alan, it's forcing large enterprises to buy new hardware. They tend to be the organizations that are loath to do hardware upgrades.
But didn't they run a special program for enterprises on Windows 7, like extending the security patches for a time?
Yeah, they have, but it's a limited period of time, and it gets more expensive every year that you want to be on it. And it is in the, you know, tens to hundreds of thousands of dollars in order to get security patches for things like Windows 7. And I think Windows 7, they may have actually ended that now. You can't get security fixes at any price now, I believe. Edward mentions, I see Linux desktop usage being considered more closely when Win 10 support ends. It's entirely possible. But I suspect that most people that are in that boat, if you're in 2025 and you still have a computer that is perfectly viable and it will not be upgradable to Windows 11, I suspect most people will just run unsupported. And if you think about it, a 10-year-old operating system, of course there can be security issues still appear, but it gets less and less likely as time goes on that they're going to find new security issues that you really have to be worried about. So I suspect that most people will just run on, you know, an unsupported operating system, rather than either switch to Linux or buy a new computer.
Time will tell, I guess.
Yep.
Okay, so final thing. As Chris mentioned, we do have a Q&A next week, March the 30th. So if you have questions or you want to share something, we had a lot of good examples tonight of things that people can share. Send us a note to suggestion box, and we'll reserve you a spot.
Thanks very much for showing up, folks.
Really good.
Have a good evening.
Thank you.
Yeah, good evening, everybody. Thanks.